And welcome back to the Sundance Reel. I'm Leslie Thatcher along with Mark Harrington. Well, as the first fully televised court case, the Pamela Smart trial, was just the beginnings of reality TV as we know about it. In the studio with us, the director of Captivated, the trials of Pamela Smart, I've got Jeremiah Zager. Good morning, Jeremiah.
Good morning.
So begin just by telling us, if you would, that the background, I mean, give us the setting here of Pamela Smart and why she went to trial.
Well, it's New Hampshire. It's the very, very early 90s. Cable television is exploding for the first time. Court TV has just come into existence. And there's a young woman who is accused of plotting to kill her husband by seducing and coercing three teenage boys, specifically one. And at first, her crime is but a blip on local news, and then it becomes suddenly, you know, tri-state area, and then national, and then worldwide. And it explodes, and it becomes the case that is so infamous today because there's films made about it. Murder in New Hampshire becomes, you know, one of the first ripped from the headlines, TV movies, and To Die For, which we all know, the Gus Van Sant film, becomes, you know, a milestone in cinema. I think it played here at the Sundance Film Festival. And I might be wrong about that. And when you look back at the trial, you start to see that the seed for that trial that the media planted became problematic in her getting a fair shake from our justice system.
So at what point then did you decide, I want to go back and look at something? I mean, at this point, you know, it's 90s, you know, I mean, almost 20 years ago.
It wasn't my decision. Yeah. I had just finished In a Dream, and Geraldine, who you just had on, was the executive producer, like I was saying, mm-hmm. and it was a big success, and HBO bought it. And Lori, who's the incredible producer of this film, had the idea for Captivated because she had spoken to a woman who knew Pamela Smart. And was an advocate for her. And the woman that woman, Eleanor Pam, described to Lori was very different from the character in To Die For, and that sparked Lori's interest. And she began to do a massive amount of research way before I even came on with her team, Gabriel Sedgwick and Stacy. And they built a archive of footage that she then gave me to look at because my job at the time was editing movie trailers. And so I cut the movie trailer together and then she saw In a Dream and she said, why don't you direct this film? And by that point, because I had looked at all that footage, I was totally fascinated as well. And we embarked on what, you know, has become a 4-year journey to finish this movie.
Wow. So Pamela Smart is convicted. What about the three kids? Were they?
Two of them are out. Mm. So they all cut deals. Mm. And at first, she wasn't even mentioned in their confessions. But on the second round, she was. And she became the focus of the case. And they cut deals. And two of them are out. And two will probably get out next year. Now, these are young people who, you know, the physical evidence matches. They walked into a house. They shot a man in the head. And they admitted to it. However, Pamela Smart has life without the possibility of parole, which Charles Manson doesn't even have. She will, you know, never get out of prison unless the governor of New Hampshire intervenes. Not even the president of the United States can get her out of prison.
So the film, based on what I've read, just isn't documenting the case, but really an attempt to show how the media can create this kind of skewed view of reality. I mean, what did you see that made you think that something's not right here?
Well, I mean, as you know, we are the media, you know, mm-hmm. and we have this incredible ability to change people's perception of reality, depending on what we say and how we say it and where we cut and what we show. And for me, that was the really interesting thing about this case, because I'm not a lawyer and I don't even like true crime that much, but I love storytelling. And I became fascinated with the courtroom as theater and how that theater translates to television and how that television translates to people's perception of reality. And it's problematic when you're looking at justice. I mean, anybody, you and I included, right? We understand how stories are malleable, how easy it is to simplify them, how easy it is to take out the gray and make things black or white, guilty or innocent, and to lose that nuance, especially when it's compartmentalized, especially when we take a story that deserves, you know, 2-3 hours and we break it down to, you know, 15-second sound bites to hold an audience's attention, and we make it as salacious and as gratuitous as possible. You know, what happens when someone's humanity is lost in that? And what happens when somebody's life is lost in that? Not only, you know, their guilt or innocence, but, you know, their very base person. I mean, that's problematic, I think.
Mm-hmm. Again, but the whole trial, I mean, wasn't it gavel-to-gavel coverage on TV? So people really did have an opportunity to see the whole picture, unlike, you know, a newscast.
Sure, but it's how, you know, most people didn't watch the whole trial all the way through. Most people watched the recap. I mean, that's really the case. And also there was commentary in between. So you might be watching something, but then, you know, it's the commentators that really synthesize it for the audience. So it's you know, it's both. But then the lens is problematic too. We don't think about the lens, but when someone is being watched, they change. You know, we talk about, you know, a very easy way to understand it is we talk about how some people are photogenic or not photogenic. You know, you look at somebody and you say, oh, that's a really handsome person or a really beautiful person. But on camera, you don't see that. Well, that's a very, very easy way to understand how the lens can change what we perceive as reality when we're looking at it without the lens. And so even that changes justice, I think, and is a really, really, you know, potent, simple argument for why cameras shouldn't be allowed in a courtroom.
Well, I agree completely in terms of the sense of how the action and the perceptions change because of the camera. But doesn't the case really come down to whether the jurors themselves were properly sequestered and isolated from that? And
exactly.
And as I understood the case, the linchpin evidence was whether you find that the tapes are authentic or not, right? Because she's...
Absolutely.
So
the jury was not sequestered, which is fascinating. Mm. So the jury was allowed to watch anything out in the world at the entire time. They weren't sequestered till the very, very last day of the trial. So who knows what they could have seen or didn't see? That's fascinating.
Because I did read there were several interviews done. I think it was by Oprah that interviewed the jurors after the fact, and they were pretty steadfast that they were isolated from the media, as I understood it, but were shocked by the sentence because they were isolated from the sentencing and then discovered. So for them, it wasn't an issue of fair trial. It was an issue of fair sentencing, which I think your film focuses on as well.
Absolutely. Well, the disproportionate sentencing is really disturbing. But another thing we look at is, you know, the reality that despite the fact that you may think you've given someone a fair trial, you have no idea. Because you're not supposed to be influenced. You're not supposed to be able to have those headlines able to read. So whether or not you say, I was not influenced by that, you have no idea because it's pervasive. So and that's why since the Pamela Smart trial, juries have been sequestered systematically when that media is pervasive. For instance, in the Trayvon Martin trial or in the O.J. Simpson case. I mean, it's consistent as we move forward. And a lot of lawyers argue that this case is the beginning of why we need to sequester juries when the media is so pervasive. And you asked one thing after that, right? You said you were talking about her sentence.
Yes.
Well, her sentence is just insane. Yeah.
So she doesn't have grounds for appeal then?
No. So the problem is that you appeal to the same judge who convicted you. So her first appeal, you know, that judge has to say, I made a mistake. And that judge was not willing to say he made a mistake. And then because the media was so vitriol, the next set of appeals was politically untenable. Like you couldn't give Pamela Smart another chance in New Hampshire because everyone in New Hampshire was convinced that she was a poison, something that, you know, was an infectation that would destroy, you know, young people across the state.
So your film somewhat sympathizes with Pamela, and is that the reason that you say that you wouldn't show the film in New Hampshire at one of your Q&As?
Oh, would be happy. I did not say that. I mean, I'm happy to show the film
in
New Hampshire.
You're not going back
there. I was sort of teasing. I mean, New Hampshire's a wonderful place. I think I took that out. That's taken out of context. But when you're investigating something that's so horrendous in any state that, you know, the surroundings become oppressive. And for me, that was, you know, talking to people who were involved in a murder, everything became scary. And I think people are afraid in that state. Many people are afraid to talk about how egregious the system of that trial became. And so when you do talk to them about it, they whisper, and, you know, we couldn't get a lot of people on tape because, you know, it's still a very sore subject.
So if we come full circle, the irony of this whole story is, of course, she started at the time the story begins. She's in media, and now you're using media to advocate, perhaps.
This is
not using, but media is her only opportunity, perhaps, for renewed consideration.
She believes that. I mean, this is not an advocacy film. This is a film that's asking us as an audience, how are we complicit, and why is this a problem? We're not just saying Pam Smart got a shitty trial and therefore she should be free. We're saying, what if you were in that chair? How would you feel? What is wrong with this system? There's a moment where Alec Beckett, the juror who you mentioned, who says, you know, he wasn't influenced, says, in accordance with her sentence, you know, she got a horrible, horrible sentence, but the system did what the system does. And I find that so problematic. When we start to allow the system to do terrible things, we become complicit in that system. And I just think that's wrong.
I need to leave it at that. But Jeremiah, sounds fascinating. You've got one more screening here at the Egyptian Theater tonight. That starts at 6 o'clock. Good luck to you, and thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
KBCW News Time now, 9:53.
Hi, this is Steve Roney with Prudential Utah Real Estate, a proud supporter of KPCW. With more than 100 sales associates and 14 gallery or ski-in offices in Park City, Prudential Utah can help you with your residential or commercial real estate needs. More information at pru-utah.com or with the Prudential Utah mobile search app.